Fortunately for us, he knew his young friend too well, or De Profundis, as it has become known, would not have survived. No sooner did Douglas receive his copy and read the first few paragraphs than he destroyed it. Robbie published as much of it as he thought fit 5 years after Oscar's death, and then gave it to the British Museum to be sealed for 50 years, so that the world was only to see it for the first time in its entirety in 1962. To read it is to find Oscar for once without his mask, no less endearing perhaps, even more so for all the faults it betrays. To hear it is to come as close as we probably ever shall to that legendary talker. It runs through a whole range of emotions, from anger to remorse, from arrogance to humility, and for a brief moment there is even a note of hope for the future. It was to be short-lived. Within 3 years, not long before he died, he was writing to a friend, "Like dear St. Francis of Assisi, I am wedded to poverty, but in my case the marriage is not a success. I hate the bride that has been given to me. I see no beauty in her hunger and her rags. I have not the soul of St. Francis. My thirst is for the beauty of life, my desire for its joy. Send me a line sometimes to tell me of the beauty you have found in life. I live now in echoes and have little music of my own." So here is that spiritual odyssey written from the depths of his hideous prison cell in the spring of 1897.
Majesty's Prison, Reading. Dear Bosie, after long and fruitless waiting, I have determined to write to you myself, as much for your sake as for mine, as I wouldn't like to think that I passed through 2 long years of imprisonment without ever having received a single line from you, or any news or message even, except such as gave me pain. Our ill-fated and most lamentable friendship has ended in ruin and public infamy for me, but the memory of our ancient affection is often with me, and the thought that loathing, bitterness, and contempt should forever take that place in my heart once held by love is very sad to me. I begin by telling you that I blame myself terribly. I blame myself for allowing an unintellectual friendship, a friendship whose primary purpose was not the creation or contemplation of beautiful things, to entirely dominate my life. From the very first, there was too wide a gap between us. You'd been idle at your school, worse than idle at your university. You didn't realize that an artist, and especially an artist such as I am, one, that is to say, the quality of his work depends upon the intensification of personality, requires for the development of his art the companionship of ideas, an intellectual atmosphere, peace, quiet, solitude. You admired my work when it was finished. You enjoyed the brilliant successes, my first nights, the brilliant banquets that followed them. You were proud, and quite naturally so, being the intimate friend of an artist so distinguished. But you couldn't understand the conditions requisite for the production of artistic work. I'm not speaking in phrases of rhetorical exaggeration, but in terms of absolute truth to actual fact, when I remind you that during the whole time